We're taking a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Great to welcome back Bill Boisenau, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinic. He teaches in the physical therapy program and certainly serves clients as well, as does Lori Tyne Brody, who is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Bill, Lori, great to have you back.
It's good to be here. It's so nice that it's not raining today.
Yeah, the sun is shining over a good part of the state.
Yahoo. It feels really good. You know, usually this time of the year we start talking about heat injuries and heat stroke, and we're still talking about frostbite.
Frostbite, exactly. Black ice.
Right.
Wind chills.
Yeah, it's a little disorienting.
Exactly.
But at least the sun's out there today. It helps a ton.
And at least we're not talking about cross-country skiing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that would be really bad.
The little things in life. But we're talking about setting a mind, maybe. Maybe there are some people who did that. Some heroes and heroines who finished that this weekend and may have ache or pain or bumper bruise to talk about.
Or windburn.
Or windburn.
Windburn. I had a little of that from golf on Saturday.
Yes, a little chafing from the wet rain and wind. Yeah, exactly.
A brave group.
Well, I don't know if Harry ran the Sit in the Mai, but he has a question. He's from Soldiers Grove, so let's find out what's on his mind. Hi, Harry.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I listened to a previous show that talked about somebody asked about stabilizing shoulders after operations, and I caught the tail end of that, and it implied a faster kind of exercise or plyometric exercise, and I'd like to get more information about that. I had an operation when I was 16 and another at 26 on both shoulders. Due to shallow capsule and rambunctious youth.
Yes.
and I was wondering, you talked about a higher velocity kind of exercise.
Yes. Stabilization exercises, particularly at the shoulder, can often involve higher speed activities. And what happens is as you increase the speed and decrease the range of movement of an exercise, you tend to get what we call co-contraction, and that is contraction of the muscle groups on both sides of the joint, and that tends to produce stabilization. So it's one of the techniques that we use to not only strengthen but to provide functional stability. It can be done with things like plyometric balls. It can be done with things like jugs with water in them. It can be done with specialized equipment like these big bows that you can shake and they oscillate.
Uh-huh.
They can be done with resistive tubing. So there's any number of ways that technique can be accomplished. But it's usually at the end of a strengthening program. You don't start out with the high-speed stuff because first you need baseline strength. So the first phase of the rehab would be restoring baseline strength, and then we would go on to a specialized technique thereafter, depending upon what kind of activities you are returning to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where might I get information about these kind of exercises, not having insurance myself? I was wondering where I might be able to get some clear information.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to think on the internet where I would send somebody. You might try looking, the Hygienic Corporation, who created TheraBand. There's the TheraBand Academy, TheraBand. If you Google that, the TheraBand Academy, they have a bunch of information.
Uh-huh.
And they're one of the resistive tubing companies.
Right. Okay.
And they may have resources on their website. Similarly, Lifeline, which is created here in Madison, may have educational information on their website as well.
Lifeline,
yeah. So those are the resistive tubing people.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a place to start and see where you can go from there.
Okay.
Yeah, I think those would be the best sources. I can't think of anything better right now.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Harry. And Helen in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Helen.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
My problem is one leg that is giving me a lot of trouble. It really aches from the foot to the knee in the front, and then also above the knee to the buttocks. And when I put any pressure on the buttocks, there's a real pain. And Mm-hmm. It's been diagnosed really as coming from my spine.
Okay.
Right.
And
that sounds
is there
right.
any type of a light exercise I can do? And incidentally, I am 90 years old, so there's many things I can't do.
Okay.
Well, there's still lots for you to do, and so I'm glad you called this morning, Helen. Helen, was there an injury that started this off?
No, there's no injury, and both my hips were x-rayed last week. Got and it. There's little arthritis in there, so there's no problem there. And also was checked for blood clots, but there's a good circulation.
Okay, that's good. And has it worsened recently in the last couple of weeks?
Well, this just came about maybe last week Wednesday, about 5 days ago.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. Have you done exercises for this condition in the past?
I have been to physical therapy several different times for different problems.
Okay. Anything for your back in the past?
Not necessarily my back. I was diagnosed, too, with fibromyalgia rheumatica, too, so I've been on prednisone for the last 18 months, but I'm weaning myself off of that slowly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. How much time can you spend on your feet in terms of walking?
How much time?
Yeah, is walking easy for you or is it painful for you?
Well, if I'm standing still, it really hurts. But if I'm walking a little bit, it doesn't hurt as much. And I can't walk any distances, but I can walk, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, what you described does sound like it most likely is coming from your back. The pathway of the pain follows a couple of nerves that come out of that low lumbar area. And a couple things to try here is to, when you're lying on your back, is to gently pull first that knee up towards your shoulder, up towards your chest, and just gently stretch it up in that direction. And do that 8 or 10 times, and then do it with both legs. Grab both knees and pull them up towards your shoulders. It's a way to add some flexion in that low lumbar spine that gives the nerve roots a little more space, a little more room. And I would encourage you to, within your home or within your dwelling to take lots of short walks. Bed rest isn't good after more than a couple of days. And since it's been less than a week, all things being equal, you should start feeling better over the next week or so. But if not, that's when I would give your physician a call and describe your symptoms. And that's also when a physical therapist could be able to help you, because there are mm-hmm. some other specific exercises to help get pain up out of the leg. Are you experiencing any numbness or tingling in your leg or foot?
No.
Okay. All right.
Now, they did prescribe Asper cream and cold packs.
Okay.
Are they...
Well, I don't think they're going to hurt. I would use those, but like I said, I would try the knee to chest exercise. Short walking. Throughout the course of the day,
sure.
And then, but by the end of this week, if you're not getting any better, I would call and mm-hmm. have somebody see you.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Helen. Appreciate your call. And Laurie, you mentioned the TheraBand Academy, and Erica Janik, our producer, who does her usual efficient
Woo-hoo-hoo!
And wonderful job, says there's a database of exercises on its website, the Academy's
Excellent.
Website.
Yeah, so that's a good thing. And as I said to Harry at the beginning, the first thing would be developing a baseline of strength. So if you're going into this without the direction of a therapist or somebody, I would start with the slow movements, being able to do at least 30 repetitions. And then I would start to mix in doing them at a higher speed, perhaps with a lighter band in a shorter range of motion. And work your way into those gradually because they're at a high speed, they use different kind of muscle fiber, and they can give you some tendonitis if you don't approach it carefully.
Okay. We had an email from Shane in Port Wing. Shane says, both of my knees are very sore when I'm kneeling and working in the garden. I haven't had any knee injuries, and they're not sore when walking. Can you suggest some exercises to help alleviate this soreness? So the knees are sore when he's kneeling and working in the garden.
as my mother would say, well, don't kneel then. But that's not an option for many people. So I guess this is what I'd say. First of all, in terms of strengthening and stretching, I would do a little bit of warm-up before I got in there, maybe a little bit of walking. You know, as you're gathering your tools, walk the long way or make a couple trips instead of, you know, putting everything in the wheelbarrow, making one trip to warm your legs up. Then I would bend my knee and reach back and grasp my foot and pull my foot towards my buttocks to stretch the muscles in front a little bit. I might do some leg raises, just tightening the muscles and lifting the leg forward a little bit. And then when I got into the garden, if possible, instead of kneeling down on both knees, I would go into what we call a half kneel. And that is one knee down and the other knee bent 90 degrees with your foot down. So you only have one knee down at a time, and you can set your weight back on your foot a little bit.
And switch then you back
can
and forth.
Switch back and forth. So you don't have all of your weight on both of your knees. It just distributes your weight better. And you can also, for people with back problems, can put one forearm on that bent knee and rest some of your body weight on your forearm, so not all your weight is on your spine as well.
Yeah, and I would guess that Shane probably has tried this, but just getting a pad to kneel on, you know, besides the half kneel, there are those pads you can buy that, again, take a lot of the pressure off your kneecap. That can get pretty sore after a while.
Yep, good points all. Ray in Manitouish Waters. Hi, Ray.
Good morning. Getting ready for musky fishing, and there's a problem that seems to come up every year, and not just for me, but all the guys in the boat, different ages, and is that our backs get so sore. It's just excruciating.
Ray and I have done a little musky fishing together, as a matter of fact.
Won't talk about how much we caught there.
No, we won't talk about what we caught. Well, I tell you what, we threw a lot of baits.
The fresh air and sunshine was excellent, and the companionship.
It offsets a lot of that.
It sounds like the backache is not from reeling in big fish, then, is what
the other day, I was peeling 10 pounds of potatoes, so I was standing at the sink for a long time, and I felt the same, and it's the muscle. Mm-hmm. It's not the vertebrae, but muscles right below the shoulder blades.
Well, that goes along with the posture that we're in and with most boats, and it does help if you have a back to the seat that you're in. I'm not sure what kind of boat that you're using here, but your
most of the time you're standing when you're casting.
So the changing positions and your posture for your upper back is dictated by what's happening through your legs and through your low back. Again, depending on how the boat is set up, it's best if you can change the position of your feet. You know, have them kind of straddled so they're underneath your shoulders, and then you can at other times have one foot in front of the other so there's more of a straddling position. By changing your foot position and leg position, it changes how you're using your back muscles. And then every so often, squeezing your shoulder blades together. A lot of what the fishing does, it tends to bring our shoulders around forward. So periodically, just kind of standing up tall, squeezing the shoulder blades together, down and back, just kind of helps wake those muscles up a little bit. And
pull back on it.
Yes, that's right. You know, if you think about when you're casting and you're slowly bringing your line in.
It's always forward.
That's right. And that's right. So it's similar to somebody who's sitting at a computer all day long. The computer kind of pulls them into that same posture. So, you know, periodically, just standing up tall, bringing those shoulder blades down and back together can help some. And then whenever you get a little break here and there to sit down, again, just to change the posture, to change the position for short periods of time, should get you further into the day without that aching and burning getting so intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did notice that if I catch a muskie, it doesn't hurt for about an hour.
And somebody, a little bird, told me that you caught your 100th muskie here not too long ago.
Yeah, I was casting for bass right off my dock.
There you go. Well, good luck, Ray, and thanks for calling.
You bet.
Appreciate it very
much. Good
luck. Ray is a great, very good fisherman and a really nice guy. Fun to fish with, that's for sure. We fished the World Muskie Championships one year.
Yeah. Excellent.
Melissa in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Melissa.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I actually am calling for my fiance. We ran our very first ever half marathon 2 weeks ago, And afterwards, he had a pain in the side of his foot, and it hasn't gone away yet. It's excruciating to the point where he can't do like an extended amount of walking or even like working around the yard without feeling it. And we haven't been into a doctor yet because he's self-employed, has major medical, and we're getting married in 2 weeks, and so he'll be on my insurance, but not yet.
What side of his foot?
It's the right foot, and it's the outside.
Ooh.
Oh, you get
that's what I was afraid you were going to say.
So could there be a crack bone in there?
Yeah, like a stress fracture.
Right.
Stress fracture of his fifth metatarsal. Yeah, he needs to have that checked out, so... Yeah. So, let's see. For now, he should be in a stiff-soled shoe. Okay, something that doesn't bend, not flexible, not as tennis shoes, but a stiff, supportive shoe. And he should get a radiograph.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Melissa, it'd be one thing if he was walking pain free and just couldn't run very far. But the fact he's having that pain with walking is, you know, if it is a fracture, worst case scenario that the fracture gets worse and worse, and then he needs surgery for it.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to avoid.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, depending upon where it's fractured in that bone, it could be an easy fix and it'll heal with time, or it could be one that doesn't heal well, and you just don't want to mess around with it.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's the bad news. Can you elope tomorrow and just do
that's
the formality
right.
in a couple weeks?
Oh, boy.
You know, we were looking on running forums, and that's what a couple of them kept saying, and we were worried about that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
yep. Yeah, you, yeah, that's there's not much else that happens on that side of your
right.
foot.
Right.
So that's the most likely candidate.
Yeah, it's best not to mess around with it.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at those aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics, and he teaches as well in the physical therapy program. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Erica Janik, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for listening in today as we visit with Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault. I wanted to say a quick thank you to the gang at Bayfield, Wisconsin, the Ashland Bayfield County Master Gardeners, and all the other folks who visited Bayfield for Bayfield in Bloom last Friday. We had a blast. It was a lot of fun. And thanks everybody who stopped by and said hello and participated. We have an email from Maya in Washburn. Right up there. Maybe Maya was at the Bayfield in Bloom. I'm not sure, but she's 32 years old, usually very active. However, since last October, she's been experiencing lower right back and sciatic pain. An MRI revealed a large herniated disc with advanced degeneration. Could physical therapy help with herniated discs?
Yes, potentially at times. There's The disc is the outer part of the disc is a really strong ligament, and there's some gel inside that ligament that adds cushion between the vertebra, and so it provides some space between vertebra in addition to the cushioning. When that annulus gets injured over time, that allows this fluid just to push out into the spaces where there are nerves, and that's what causes the sciatica. So sciatica is nerve pain that is coming from the back and can be very, very debilitating. It depends on the extent of the disc damage, and the fact that it's been since October, so looking at 7 months, at a minimum that means that recovery that starts now, it's just going to take longer than it would have 5 or 6 months ago. The big thing with this is if there's any numbness, weakness in that leg, that makes an injection or discussion of surgery a little higher priority.
Okay.
If there is no numbness or weakness, then there's a chance that there's a certain type of exercise program designed to get pain up out of the leg toward the back. We call that centralization. And that can be taught, initiated by a physical therapist very easily. And then a lot of that is done on your own multiple times during the day. And once the sciatica resolves, then you can work on getting the pain out of the back. But the big thing is the neurological status. Any numbness or weakness, then there's it's more of an urgent issue to get pressure off that nerve.
Bud in Wausau has a comment or question. Let's go there. Hi, Bud.
Hi. Well, I think my comment is very, very timely after that last person's problem. I had sciatica a year ago. I, through the process of visiting a chiropractor that took an x-ray that found, again, that my disc in the back had flattened and protruded to the nerve. The chiropractor couldn't help me because of the danger of that damaging the nerve. I went to a bone and spine specialist, and operation or cortisone was the suggestion. I then discovered through a process of, let me just say that I then bought an inversion table under $100. And it was like electric shock all the way to my heel. I'm sure that person that just described their problem is experiencing the same thing. The cure, again, is to liquidate. You have to drink a lot of liquid. If you weigh 160 pounds, 80 ounces, or 80 is half of the 160, that's so many ounces of liquid you must drink each day as you take a 10-minute inversion on these inversion tables, hanging by your heels, in other words, and that stretches and allows that disc to absorb that liquid and rebuild itself. And that took 30 treatments over 30 days, 10 minutes per day, and I was back well, and for $100.
The inversion table has been around for quite a while, and it's a form of traction. And so going along with what Bud described and what I described for Maya, with enough traction force, it separates the vertebra, which gives the nerves more space, and it can change the pressure in and around the disc. It's just the question is how much damage to the disc, how intact is that outer ligament, whether that is going to work or not. The thing with the inversion table to be careful of is blood pressure and pressure in the eyes. When they first came out, there are people who developed some problems with the eyes in particular, but blood pressure as well. There's lots of different forms of traction. The inversion one is literally you're hanging from your knees or your heels upside down or to some degree of being upside down. There are other traction apparatuses where you're lying flat on your back or on your stomach and you get a similar type of force or pull. So it's with somebody like Bud with the traction, he got it at the right time. And again, the consistency day after day clearly was enough for him and give that nerve a chance to heal. But again, as the big thing here is the worrying about numbness and troubles going to the bathroom and weakness that can happen with some of the herniated discs or protruded disc types of problems.
Mm-hmm. And then the other issue would be after your symptoms resolve to rebuild your core. Because this disc herniated for a reason, and chances are you've been less active than usual. And so it's really important to follow that up with good strengthening exercises to protect your spine and protect that as it continues to heal, and that will remodel for probably another 2 years after your original injury.
Yeah. All right. Bud, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from... Well, let's see. Before we take that email, let's go to Carla, who's been waiting quite a while from Rice Lake. Carla, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about vertigo. I'm 30 years old. In the last 18 months, I've been treated 4 times for vertigo. It keeps coming back. I believe I might have had it. I mean, even like when I was 18, I went to the doctor and said I was getting dizzy. You know, like when I sit up from bed, and he told me to move slower, so I got kind of mad and didn't go back to the doctor for a while. just recently I had MRI to make sure that, like, there wasn't any tumors or anything, and I haven't had it now for 2 months, but I'm guessing it's going to come back. Maybe it won't. Should I keep doing the exercises that the physical therapist does? Should I keep doing that, like, on a routine basis, or should I only do it when I have the symptoms, or is there anything else I should be doing?
I'd say if you've been doing the exercises and you've had 2 months where you haven't had any vertigo, I'd say keep doing them.
I haven't been doing them.
Oh, you haven't been doing them. Okay. Do you know what contributed to them stopping?
Just the treatment by the last time I was treated by the neurologist, just by doing, like, laying your head, you know, tilting your head to the 90 degree and laying back and rotating like that way.
Okay. Okay, so you were given some of those sort of vestibular exercises, head repositioning kinds of things.
Yeah.
And they get you over an acute episode.
Yes.
Okay. And then what are the maintenance exercises from the physical therapist?
None. They didn't tell me to do anything. But I had heard from somebody that, oh, you should keep doing those to, like, train the little crystals in your ear to stay where they're supposed to be. But I had never heard that before.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. That's a little bit out of my domain of expertise. But I'd say it certainly wouldn't hurt to continue doing them if there's some way you can incorporate some of those things into your daily routine, like before you get out of bed in the morning or before you go to sleep at night when you're lying down to do some of those head positioning exercises. I can't imagine that it would be detrimental at all.
Yeah, I don't think it would hurt either, but Carla, maybe what you could do is call the physical therapist up, call the clinic that you were seen at, and one, just give them an update of how you're doing, and then ask them specifically, because there are certain exercises designed to get you out of the acute phase, and the question is, what's getting you into, what's leading to the problem that you're having, and there may be different exercises, or maybe that exercise, it won't make any difference, but I would maybe give the clinic a call. And ask them specifically. I mean, it's a really, really good, legitimate question.
Yep.
Nobody's been able to give me any reason. And what are some of the reasons that vertigo happens? Does anybody really know why it happens to some people and not others?
Yeah, well there's different causes of it. And the type that you had that can be treated with the exercise that you described and the positioning of the head and moving those crystals around, that's one cause. And so it really depends on the underlying cause of the problem will dictate the treatment. There's some cause of vertigo where exercise is not going to make any difference at all. And you need to work closely with a physician, whether it's medication or, you know, things like that. But it really depends on the underlying etiology or cause in terms of what's going to be your best bet treatment-wise. And but again, going back to your original question, I think calling the physical therapy clinic that you were seeing, call them up and ask them about the utility of the exercises when you're feeling good.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Josh, who is 27 years old, diagnosed with tendonitis about 8 years ago. Now it's bursitis. When I wake up and through the day, my hand is swollen and gets numb. Arm and shoulder pain ranges from minor to extreme. What do you think it is and what should I do?
Well, swelling and numbness in your hand are not associated with bursitis. That's not bursitis. So it sounds as if he has either something happening at his neck, something happening through his shoulder where he's getting some lymph, some thoracic outlet, some compression of something where he's getting swelling trapped in his arm, as well as the numbness and tingling. Sometimes if you get swelling, that can secondarily cause some of that numbness because it puts pressure on the nerve. So it would be important to know if he gets the tingling before, concurrent with, or after the swelling, what brings it on. But if he hasn't seen a physician about this, he needs to go in and have the scene. This is not a typical itis, tendonitis, bursitis kind of a problem.
So it's important for him to get in and see a physician.
It's important to get in and have that evaluated and the cause of that determined.
Amanda in Wausau emailed to say, I've been doing yoga to improve my flexibility. However, I've noticed a slight pain in my right Achilles tendon. What's the best and safest way to lengthen and strengthen this tendon?
The Achilles, the easiest way to lengthen it is standing and letting your heel drop over the edge of a step. And if you do that with your knee both straight and slightly bent, you'll feel it stretch in a different place. So with your knee straight, you usually feel it a little higher in your gastrocnemius. And if you bend it slightly, you'll feel it a little bit lower in your soleus. So that's the stretching exercise. The strengthening exercise would be standing with your both of your heels over the edge of that same step, going up into a toe raise on both feet, then picking up the uninvolved leg and lowering with just the involved one. So up with two, down with one. Up with two, down with one. So that'd be the first place I'd start with
that. How many times?
Usually you go until fatigue, 30 repetitions or so. If you can do 30 reps at a slow speed and it's pretty easy and you don't have any symptoms afterwards, then you go up to a moderate speed. If that's still okay, then you start adding body weight. You add weight to it. So you put a backpack on with, you know, a 5-pound bag of sugar or something in it, and you go at it again.
We have Karen, who has developed Morton's neuroma and would like to continue bicycling. Is there anything she can do to take the pressure off the ball of her foot? Any exercises?
I don't know that there's any exercises to take the pressure off the ball of her foot. That would typically be handled with an orthotic of some sort. So I'd probably start you can try a metatarsal pad of some sort to see if it spreads the metatarsal heads enough to help with the symptoms. She may have to get some help with her shoe design. There's all kinds of wedges and so on that can go in your shoe and outside your shoe now for cyclists. So she may need some extra help there. But you might start with some simple things like a metatarsal pad. She can talk to a podiatrist, preferably a podiatrist who bikes, so understands the bike shoe and the technique of biking. But I'd probably start with that. I don't know that there's any exercises that are going to help with this.
Mark and Eau Claire, we are on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, I think I'm having some rotator cuff problems. Specifically, I've been doing a lot of disc golfing, and I'm very active. And when the pain that's existing right now is when I reach across my body with my right arm, the muscle that's at the top of the shoulder, kind of towards the front. And I don't know, when I reach across, that's where I'm still having pain and almost like a pinching almost. So I'm wondering sometimes when I stretch it with the stretches I found online, like it actually starts to then hurt more. I don't know if there's a tear or what.
Oh, you found something very important. Yes. Stretching does place a load on that tendon, and stretching isn't always the right answer for that. So, yes, reaching across your body, that when that hurts, does that, it pinches in front, you feel it on top of your shoulder or more in front?
Right in front, in like where it bends.
Where it bends, yep, okay. Yeah. Because reaching across can also be your AC joint on top of your shoulder. But you're probably getting some impingement in your shoulder. And so I would start with a rotator cuff strengthening program. I probably wouldn't do much stretching at this point.
Okay.
If I did stretching, I'd probably stretch the other direction, pulling your arm back to sort of open up your chest.
Okay.
Because the technique of frisbee golfing, you may be getting shortening in front and too much lengthening in back. And then I'd start on a good rotator cuff strengthening program. That's, you know, lifting. You can find some of those things online, but lifting up.
Exercises I found online.
What's that?
There were three specific exercises I found online.
Okay. They should be something like lifting your arm straight forward about 45 degrees forward from the straight out to your body if you bring it forward about 45 degrees.
Okay.
Does that sound familiar?
Yep. I think that was one of them. There's one where you're laying on your side and you're like your arm's at a 90-degree angle. And you,
Put a little towel roll underneath your elbow for that so your elbow's away from your side a little bit.
Okay.
And what was the third one?
I can't remember right now.
All right.
Is there a website I could go to find these that you would suggest?
Hmm. online website. Well, when Bill and I get ours going.
I wonder if the
TheraBand Academy. I think the TheraBand Academy probably has some. But, boy, be careful with the resistive bands for this. They can flare it. I'd stick with some lightweight, you know, 1 or 2 pounds. The 45 degrees forward, thumb up, not thumb down. You'll see people tell you thumb down. Thumb up is safer. And the one on your side. And a straight lift right out to the side, too, would be helpful. Up to shoulder height, but not above.
Yeah.
There you go.
Should I not be doing anything with my right arm, pretty much? I'm teaching myself to disc golf with my left arm right now.
Okay, so you can get rotator cuff tendonitis on that one, too?
Yeah.
I know, but I really like disc golfing.
Okay.
I'm not doing anything with my right arm right now. Mm-hmm. I play volleyball, and I'm playing with my left arm right now. And I'm wondering, how long should I...
Ice on the right one. And, you know, I mean, volleyball's tough because it's overhead. The disc golf, you know, you might see if there's a level of golfing you can do that doesn't make you worse.
Mm-hmm.
And see if you can do that. Sometimes completely stopping and then you say, oh, it feels better. Then you go back to it. If you haven't rehabbed it, you're back at square one and all you've done is lose a bunch of time.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And, Mark, if the things you're describing are good things to try, but it sounds like you're having to make a lot of modifications, and if you have the ability, you know, if you don't start getting better within the next couple of weeks, I'd go in and get evaluated. There's a reason that time alone isn't taking care of this for you. It was good you called. Pinching is not a sensation you want anybody trying to exercise through. Usually just cause more irritation with that kind of sensation. But your idea of resting it is a good idea. But again, in a couple of weeks, not that you're going to be cured, but you should notice some improvement. And if not, I'd want to get evaluated, have a physical therapist examine your upper back, your neck, and that shoulder area and see what they can come up with for you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Mark. And Amy in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks for calling.
I'm calling because I guess it's been 5 weeks now. I had not done anything extraordinary with my right wrist, but I was working outside building shelves, you know, using hammer, screw gun, you know. And the next day I woke up and my right wrist hurt so bad. And after listening to, I guess it's been about 4 callers ago, I think it's fair that I should mention that I have some right shoulder issues. But when I wear a wrist brace, it feels a little better. I went in 2 weeks after I did it, and they did an x-ray because I had thought maybe I broke it. I definitely am missing a lot of strength in that hand. It's my primary hand. So when I go to write, you know, it gets tired about halfway through writing a check. You know, I mean, it doesn't seem to have the stick-to-itiveness. It definitely hurts more in my far two fingers, my pinky and ring finger on my right hand. A brace really helps, but when I take it off, there's a sensation that is not pleasant at all. And, you know, like mm-hmm. I said, I'm still have no strength, and I don't really know what I did to it. The doctor just said, you know, ibuprofen, ice.
Mm-mm.
The brace was my own idea.
Yeah. Well, the brace was a good idea to start with. But, you know, Amy, it sounds like this is more than just a wrist problem. And my guess is it could be coming from your neck. Especially with the, you know, the two fingers you mentioned, that goes along with the lower part of our neck and certain nerve roots and the weakness. You know, you can develop a tendonitis and there can be weakness secondary to pain. But the weakness, you need to think nerve first. And there is a little nerve on that side of the hand that sometimes can get irritated. But the fact you've got some discomfort going up to your shoulder, I would be thinking that someone needs to examine your neck. Along with the rest of your upper limb, and if it's coming from your neck, there are some specific do's and don'ts to give the nerves a chance to heal and recover.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like more than just a local wrist problem to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a classic problem of when you have those symptoms in your two mm-hmm. fingers, as Bill mentioned. There's some nerves locally at the wrist, and when you put that wrist splint on, you know, the fact that it hurts a lot more afterwards, it could be coming from that nerve. It could also be coming from your elbow, where that nerve is quite superficial, coming around your elbow, and you did a lot of repetitive elbow stuff, or it could be coming from all the way in your neck, which is why you need a good evaluation to figure out where the source is, so the intervention can be directed at the source and not just at the symptoms.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, with my shoulder, I had an atrophied muscle about 10 years ago, and they never really gave me much of a reason. I went through physical therapy and everything, and I just didn't feel like there was a satisfactory thing with that. So maybe it's kind of coming down from right. that. So yeah.
could have been at your neck that whole time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck, Amy. Thank you very much for calling. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, UW physical therapists, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guest today as we talk aches and pains. And we have a question or an email from Susan in Plover, Wisconsin. She has a strained wrist and ankle following a car accident. Should I wear a brace for support to help healing? So a strained wrist and ankle.
Well, it depends. Just the students always hate when we say that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing is true here. If your symptoms are acute enough and you're having trouble with normal movement patterns, for example, you can't walk normally without some support for your ankle, then you need some support for your ankle. But it probably shouldn't be on all the time so that you can strengthen that. And the same is true for your wrist. If you need occasional times during the day where your wrist needs a break because it's painful and because you find that you're using your arm in a different way because your wrist hurts, then you need some support. But you also need to come out of it so that you can use it to help get it stronger. I would hope that she is being seen in physical therapy for some strengthening exercises to help restore the strength and movement and function of those body parts.
Let's turn to Donna in Viola next. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What can we do for you?
Oh, thank you. The show has been really interesting, by the way. Thank you.
Thanks.
I've recently, sort of recently, within the year, developed some heel pain on my right foot. It's like in the arch and just, up in the inside and toward the outside a little bit. I walk a lot, and I'm wondering what might cause that, what I can do to make it stop, because I'm not going to give up walking.
So it's, tell me again, it's up toward the outside and in the arch? Is it more arch pain or is it more heel pain?
It's probably where whatever's in the arch connects right to the heel. It's like just to the front of where the heel is.
Okay, that'd be your plantar fascia. So that was a pretty good description of what it is. Yes, your plantar fascia attaches right at the front of the heel and it supports your arch. How does it feel first thing in the morning?
That's when it's the worst.
Okay, yep.
I get out and it's like, ah!
Yep, that's the classic. Okay. So here's what you need to do. You need to stretch your plantar fascia. So the easiest way to do that is if you take your right leg and you cross it over your left knee and you pull your toes and your ankle up towards your shin. So just stretching it back that way.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is making sure you have really good shoes with good arch support. Third thing is before you get out of bed, warm up your feet. The problem is you spend all night with your toes kind of pointed. That's how we normally sleep. And so the plantar fascia on the bottom of your foot becomes shortened during the night. And then you step down on it first thing in the morning with all your body weight and you stretch it when it's cold and tight. And it really doesn't like that. So warm it up a little bit. Some icing, some ice massage. If you fill like a small water bottle or soda bottle with water and stick it in the freezer and roll it underneath your arch after you finish your walking. And then, sort of the last thing is a night splint. And you can order those online. It holds your foot up at a 90-degree angle during the night. They take a couple months to work, but they are pretty helpful.
Okay, so this is possibly something that'll go away, or
it is possible. There's a couple questions that linger in my mind, and that is, why do you have it in one foot and not the other? Is there something about the way you walk or move or your anatomy that has set you up to have problems in one leg? In which case, all these interventions might not help if you don't get to the root of the problem. So my caveat is you can try some of these things, but if you're not turning the corner, go in and have somebody take a look at you so that it doesn't get a whole lot worse. Because once it gets really bad, it gets really hard to get rid of. You can ask my sister.
Yeah. Well, Donna, especially since it sounds like it's been almost a year. Mm-hmm. You need to give up your walking, but a little bit of cross training right now, especially with the weather's getting nicer, is, you know, walk. But then on other days, if you can bike or you can swim, so you get something aerobic, but you're not stressing that area quite as consistently or quite as much. So you just kind of decrease the intensity of the load on that plantar fascia, and give it a chance to heal a little bit.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, so this wouldn't be the time to try to take up running again then.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. No. And it's
darn
also
it.
I know. It's also the time of year that we move into our silly little sandals, I call them. Those are going to be tough on your plantar fascia because it has to work pretty hard to stabilize your foot without the support of a shoe.
Okay. I've noticed that those are pretty much not something I should be wearing. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. All righty. Okay. Well, I'll take care of that then. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thanks, Donna, for calling. Appreciate it. And Alyssa in Milwaukee, we are on to you now. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I am about 6 months pregnant right now.
Okay.
And I am in pretty good shape, weigh about 124 pounds. And lately, and within like the past few weeks, I've been having this very sharp pain, on my back, specifically like where my hip is. Like, it doesn't even feel like it's muscle. It feels like it's on my hip, and it's actually just on the right side. So I'll be, standing for not even that long of a time, and then I go to walk again, and it's a very, very sharp pain. And but then once I start walking for a little bit, then it goes away. So I was wondering what that might be.
Okay. And Alyssa, did anything happen a few weeks ago? I mean, a slip, a fall?
I mean, I've noticed myself getting, obviously getting bigger as my pregnancy progresses.
Right.
But this is actually my second pregnancy, and I don't remember, any sort of pain like this the first time around. And my pregnancy has been pretty uneventful, I guess we'll say.
Okay.
I haven't really had any sort of problems up until this point. So.
Okay.
I was wondering what I should do.
Well, and then specifically where the pain is, and you say hip, is it on the outside of your hip? You mentioned your back.
It feels on the inside, on the right.
In the groin area?
No, it's on my back.
Okay.
And then on the right side, I guess.
Okay. Well, there's two joints in that area that can be causing you. One is your sacroiliac joint, which is not unusual to become involved during pregnancy with the ligamentous laxity, and or your hip.
Okay.
The fact that you feel better after you've been moving for a while is probably a good thing, but I would I'd recommend seeing a physical therapist. They can examine that sacroiliac joint area, determine pretty quickly whether that's where the problem is coming from or not.
Okay.
And if it is, they can teach you some specific exercises to kind of correct the position of the sacrum. And sometimes a belt, a sacroiliac joint belt, can help. Just add some stability to the area so you can stay as active as you want to be. And so there are physical therapists that specialize with back care, and especially during pregnancy. So, when you call a clinic that's convenient and close for you, just ask if they have a therapist on staff who works with women who are pregnant with back problems.
Okay.
And they should be able to take good care of you.
Would you recommend maybe I go to like a chiropractor and see maybe if they can help? Or
well, they can potentially help as well. I would not recommend an adjustment being done or a manipulation technique, and that's no matter who you see, whether it's a chiropractor or a physical therapist. There are very gentle ways to help correct the position of the sacroiliac joint and then the sacroiliac joint belt, but you do not want to be manipulated in that area at this point in time.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. And Jeff in Oconomowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff. Whoops, hold on here. Now we got Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. I have a preventative question for you, and I'm wondering, I'm very much into rock climbing and archery and play volleyball during the summers. So my concern, I'm 23, and I'm concerned that I'm going to irreparably hurt my shoulders. How can I go about, I mean, spacing out these activities or stretching, or is there anything I can do so I don't end up tearing something I shouldn't?
Oh, that's a good question. So rock climbing, archery, and volleyball. Okay.
Lots of shoulder.
It is a lot of shoulder stuff. So, you know, obviously not overloading too many activities on one day. That just makes sense. And having a good weight training program that gives you baseline strength. And I know some people might say that sounds crazy because you're already doing so much stuff with your shoulders. However, each of those activities works a muscle group in a certain way. And what happens is other muscle groups can become weakened because they're being insufficiently trained. And so you develop this imbalance around the shoulder. So having a good baseline strengthening program, working on your core, you know, hips, glutes, abdominals, as well as sort of your shoulder core, which is your scapula around your shoulder blade, your upper back muscles, will help maintain a healthy shoulder girdle. You know, the rock climbing uses a lot of isometrics. The archery is a lot of isometric. Also, volleyball is going to be a higher speed activity. So you do have some variability there, which is good. And the archery is good for your upper back. But I'd say still having a strengthening program that serves as a baseline three times a week or so.
The other thing, Jeff, would be flexibility in your mid-back. I don't know if you've ever seen a foam roller. I mean, yoga would be another example of activity that can really improve flexibility through your rib cage and mid-back area, which will help your shoulder flexibility. Using a foam roller where you stretch over that, you're on your side or laying on your back, is a good way to stretch the mid-back area. I think that would be important for you, too.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests today, Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics in the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. They're here to answer your questions via phone or email. We have an email from Doris in Shawano County. I can't stand on either leg alone. Is the bird dog exercise good for that? What about an exercise bike?
Well, I guess the question would be, why can't she stand on either leg alone? And if she falls over when she stands on one leg, then I'm thinking bird dog's probably not very good because she'll end up on the floor. But the first issue is dealing with what the underlying cause is. Is it neurologic? Is it that she doesn't that she's lightheaded, or she has balance difficulties that originate, you know, from her vestibular system? Is it that she lacks strength? Is it because she has pain? So the first step is dealing with the underlying cause of why she can't stand on one leg, and then doing the functional training like standing on one leg in a controlled environment. So what you might do is start out standing in a doorway so that you have support on either side, and then practice standing on one leg for a few seconds in that protected state, and that can help build up some strength at the same time. So I'd probably start with that. You know, bicycling would certainly help with what we call peripheral aerobics, that is vascularization in her lower extremities. It would help with her overall aerobic base, if that's part of why she can't stand on one leg. But will it specifically address her inability to stand on one leg? Probably not.
We have Deb in Nisida with a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I've been diagnosed with lower back pain. I've had MRIs done. I can't find anything wrong with me. So the other day I was at Walmart, and I tried that Dr. Scholl machine that tells you how your stand is. And I bought some insets. I figured, you know, what the heck, might as well try it. Well, for the last 3 days, my lower back pain has disappeared. It said I had broken arches, and then I tended to walk on the outside of my foot. Now, that's the one thing. Whether that's good or not, I don't know. I'll take your, you know, what you say is as to what that, how well it does. The other thing is, I do a lot of genealogy work, so I sit in a computer chair a lot during the day. Well, I've noticed on my right leg, when it rubs against the arm of the chair, later in the day it tends to get numb, and then it'll get tingly. And then sometimes, not always, but sometimes at night, I will wake up with an excruciating Charlie horse in there. Is there something that I can do to work that muscle out?
Okay, well, a couple things. You mentioned that the MRI was done and it didn't show anything, and I think I'll tie this into some other callers. There's reason to have back pain that won't show up on an MRI, and on the flip side, there are people who've never had a day of back pain and have significant disc problems or disc herniations in the back. So there's not always a good correlation with what is seen on an MRI and people, the absence or presence of symptoms. The fact the MRI was negative is a good thing. That means that structurally there's nothing major wrong with your back. And the fact that the insteps, the support seemed to help, certainly when people are on their feet much at all, foot mechanics, foot posture can make a big difference all the way up through the hips and the back. And so if it changes your standing pattern, your walking pattern, that can allow muscles to work more efficiently in your back and put your back in a little better posture. And it really is no downside to wearing those as long as you're not developing blisters. And, of course, if you're feeling better, I mean, I would keep using them.
Okay.
The numbness in the leg and the tingling with the computer work that you do, one of the recommendations I would be is to try to give yourself some breaks during the day and not sit for hours and hours and hours. I understand that you need to be at a computer, but you need to give yourself relatively frequent breaks every 30 to 45 minutes. You don't need long breaks. Getting up from the chair for 2-3 minutes, any excuse to walk, stretch a little bit would be really helpful for you. I don't know if you can adjust the height of your keyboard and your monitor so you can do some of your computer work standing and at other times sitting. If you can modify your workstation, that should also help you.
Okay.
And if you're sitting as part of your vocation, you want a really good chair. We talk about our runners and walkers, how important good footwear is. People who sit need a good chair wear.
Can I ask you, they have those computer chairs that basically you're on your knees and, it helps you keep your posture better. And they also have those they're like a big round ball that you have to learn how to balance on.
Yes.
Are those any good?
Well, potentially, yes. The knee chair, and one ideally, you should try it first for you'll know within a few weeks whether it's a good thing for you or not.
Okay.
But certainly it allows you to modify the position of your back and use different muscles to support yourself. The ball, you can get some exercise while you're sitting and you can move, which is a good thing. The key is the height of these chairs and your keyboard. In general, the more, if we go back to more of a standard office chair, the more you can adjust, the better. The height of the chair, the angle of the back, the armrest, the tilt of the seat, the more you can adjust, the better to make sure it fits you.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I did find that I needed to do is I bought one of those things that you hook on your chair for the lower part of your back.
Oh, a low back support?
Yes. And that helped a lot as far as my posture went.
Yeah.
Well, you said earlier that your leg was brushing up against the arm of the chair.
Yeah.
So
I'm a big person. I mean,
okay.
I'm not a small petite person. So unless I buy a chair for a big butt.
Well, sometimes that pressure against the arm of your chair can create some numbness or tingling by putting pressure on a nerve.
Okay.
So modifying your chair, as Bill said, to take that pressure off may make a big difference for you.
Mm-hmm. Or getting a chair with no arms on it would probably be better.
Yeah, but then you'd be careful of your upper back.
Yeah.
That's the trade-off.
Right.
Okay.
The more you can just – the other thing is, if you get a good office chair and then maybe the ball and then you can alternate mm-hmm. sitting on one versus mm-hmm. the other during the course of the day, that would eliminate – that would give mm-hmm. – take the pressure off the outside of your leg at times. You're using different muscles. So if you could swing that, that might be a good option for you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. And Kathy in Plain, we are on to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I pulled my ligaments in my right knee when I was about 16 years old. I'm in my late 40s now. And ever so often, if I come down on my knee quickly, it'll feel like it will wobble, and it will feel like it's going to give out on me like it did when I was back 16. And I was wondering if there's a brace I should be wearing when I walk every day on my treadmill, or if I should be doing some exercises to prevent, this happening to me again.
Yes. In a word, you probably had a strain or a sprain of some of those ligaments that provide stability to your knee.
Yeah.
And every once in a while you catch it. So one of the risks you have now is that you catch it and you tear your meniscus or your cartilage that provides a cushion. And if you do that, you'll accelerate arthritis in that joint, and you don't want to do that. So there are a number of balance and strength and stabilization exercises you can do for that leg. It's also very important to have good core strength. They've correlated a lot of hip strength with knee stability, so some strengthening around the hip joint would be key. And you really should be under the direction of a physical therapist for that. So one or two visits to get trained in the things that you can do at home. You might do it on a wobble board. They can give you a number of things that you can do to work on both your core and your knee strength. In terms of the brace, probably not a brace for walking, but research has shown that if you have just a pull-on knee sleeve, it increases your awareness of where your knee is in space, and you're a little less likely to come down on it wrong. So that's something you could do for your walking or when you're in a high-risk situation. But the real key is for you to have that muscle memory or in that muscle activation pattern that's going to protect your knee all the time. Because when you get out of bed during the night to make your way to the bathroom, you're not going to stop and pull on your knee brace, and you're not going to want to think about, you know, that toy on the floor or that crimp in the rug, and next thing you know, you're down. So it's good to have the training that's with you all the time.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Linda in Middleton, your turn now. Hi, Linda.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with both my hips. I was first diagnosed with bursitis, and cortisone shots did not help, and I kept complaining, and finally in March I had an MRI which revealed an acute tear in the trochanter, is that how you say that?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Muscle in my right hip, and a less of a tear in my left hip, and also arthritis. And so when I sit for a long time and have to stand up, I really have to stand for a little while to get so I can walk. It's painful when I first stand up. And also, I guess the pain makes me feel vulnerable. You know, I guess it's unsteady, though I don't really feel unsteady. I just feel the pain. And I have to wait.
Ah, we lost her.
What happened?
I don't know. Sounds like the sounds
just
like
dropped
the,
off.
Sounds like the phone, and we don't have enough.
Well, I think maybe we can try a little bit. And we're guessing here somewhat, but the pain that she describes and the stiffness when she first stands up, again, that makes sense based on the muscle injury that Linda described for us and how that could lead to the unsteadiness. Depending on how acute this tear is and how extensive, she does need some strengthening, which would help the arthritis and hopefully promote healing. I don't know if a pool,
pool would be a great place for her to go, because you can do the strengthening exercises for the hip muscles in the core without that risk of falling and without all the weight on the hip joints, especially if she has some arthritis in those hips. A lot of times the weight-bearing exercises and the kinds of strengthening you need to do to get those muscles stronger, it's too hard on land. It places too much load on the joint in a limited range of motion. So the pool's a really great place to start and then transition to land.
Right.
Down the road. So I think that's probably where she should start with that.
Okay. Yeah. Patty in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I was given an MRI about a year ago and diagnosed with some protruding discs in my neck and my lower back. And recently, I've noticed a lot of clicking in my neck and my head you know, just turning and moving about, I'll hear a loud clicking noise. And I've known that I had an injury in my knee, and when I bend down, there's a lot of clicking in my knee joint also. But what's particularly worrying me is just the head and the neck area, because I know I've got some protruding disc issues there. And I just wondered if there were, you know, if that was something I should worry about, or if there's some neck exercises I can do to help that. Or I had a massage done, and the massage therapist told me that my neck is incredibly tight, and you know, he thought there might be some exercises I could do for that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you called. So there hasn't been a recent flare up, a recent injury, Patty?
No.
Okay, and with this increase in clicking, you haven't noticed any numbness or tingling in your hands or feet?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Then most likely what it's coming from would be similar to your knees, where you probably have kind of a roughened joint surface moving over another roughened joint surface. I know every time I squat, my kneecaps pop and crack a little bit. I have a little bit of arthritis underneath my kneecap. And generally, as long as that clicking is not associated with your neck getting locked, any sharp shooting pain, it's nothing to be overly concerned about. The
okay.
fact that it's by your head and neck, that just makes it loud, which can be mm-hmm. disconcerting.
Okay.
But the tightness certainly ties into that. Now, there's nothing that exercise is going to do that is going to change the protruding discs.
Right.
Strengthening around your neck to help keep some pressure off the neck can be helpful. And also flexibility in your mid-back would be really good for your neck and your low back. That mid-back area, if there's any stiffness there, which there isn't lots of people, that dictates the posture of your head and neck and how hard the muscles have to work to support your head and neck. So really an upper back program along with appropriate neck strengthening could be helpful to you. And a lot of that you'd be able to do on your own.
Okay.
You know, if you haven't seen a physical therapist since this clicking has gotten accentuated, again, within a couple of visits, they should be able to tell you how much they can help you, but they can educate you easily on some do's and don'ts that could mm-hmm. help this for you.
Good enough. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Valerie from Burnhamwood called or emailed us and says, I'm an active runner walker. In the past, I've been known to have IT band syndrome in my right hip, so I know what those symptoms feel like. For the last couple of weeks now, after I started my 4-mile running, I have a sharp pain in my right hip at the bone, which actually radiates upward into my side when stretching. What kind of muscle strain might I be feeling with the pain at the site of my hip that radiates upward? What can I expect from physical therapy?
So it sounds to me from what she said that she's clear that it's not iliotibial band. And I'm not sure what she experienced with iliotibial band before. Iliotibial band can manifest at the hip or at the knee. And at the hip, usually it's in the area of your greater trochanter, your bone that kind of sticks out to the side there. And there's a bursa there. It could be the trochanteric bursa. I'm not clear where she's talking about, if she's talking about her trochanter, the hip bone that sticks out. It could be some trochanteric bursitis. And radiating upward, it could be referred pain from that same area. It could also be any of her gluteal muscles, the gluteus maximus, the upper fibers, and the gluteus medius feed into iliotibial band syndrome. So she may be developing some tendinopathy in those muscles that radiate or that attach up in the buttocks and come down onto the greater trochanter. So what should she expect from physical therapy? Should be a good evaluation to find the source of the problem. And then some specific intervention. It could be isolated gluteus medius and gluteus maximus upper fiber strengthening. Could be sitting on a tennis ball for some deep tissue massage right where those tendons attach to the greater trochanter. It would really depend upon the findings of the therapist. And again, if it's on the same side that she's always had symptoms before, why is she continuing to get symptoms on that side? So I would hope a gait analysis, leg length, asymmetry side to side to see what the underlying issue is.
Yeah, and I would think I'd be less worried about this since she has been active, a walker runner for a while, but she, it sounds like she's changed the intensity of the with the running in the last 4 weeks. So stress fracture, and it goes back to Lori's idea. I would expect a really good thorough examination by the PT to look at soft tissues and bone in terms of where is the sharp pain coming from.
You know, Bob in Minocqua wonders, do you have to be referred by a doctor for PT for insurance to cover it?
Yeah. There are some insurers that do require a physician referral. Many do not. You know, Medicare does require a referral. You know, a physical therapist can see a patient on Medicare for one visit, but that physical therapist needs to communicate with the physician, so the physician will sign off on the on the plan of care. But for people who are not covered by Medicare or Medicaid, there are many insurers that do not require a physician referral. So if Bob is thinking going to PT, the best way is to call the PT clinic or department to let them know what kind of insurance he has. And many times they'll be able to help him, or he can call his insurer and ask specifically.
And Tom in Thief River Falls had rotator cuff surgery in February. It's been nearly 4 months since the surgery. He says, I've been advised by the therapist to take another 2 to 3 months before I use my arm for anything strenuous, such as moving bales of hay and sacks of grain. How can I speed this process up and or be sure I don't re-injure the tendon by overdoing it?
Oh, that was a great question. How can I speed up the process and not re-injure myself? That's like an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. So how can you speed up the process? Turn the clock ahead, but I don't think anyone can really do that. It's a matter of time. It takes time. The tissues remodel. Tendons have a very poor blood supply, and so the remodeling process is slow. In terms of advice, I would say follow the PT's advice. Strengthening is the way to go. That's what's going to help those fibers heal and realign and become stronger. In terms of not injuring yourself, the big thing is to avoid sudden movements. So if the bale of hay slips, let it go. Don't try to grab it. Don't reach for it. Don't try to slow it down. Let it go. Same thing with the grain of rice. And if you go to pick it up, bag of grain.
Bag of grain.
Whatever. You know, when you go to pick it up, get somebody to help you. You don't have to do all that stuff yourself. And if you start to lose it, let it go. Don't try to grab at it. You know, start with smaller bags, work your way up to bigger. Just being, you know, thoughtful and conscientious, and know that it'll take 12 to 24 months for that to completely remodel.
And Eric has been diagnosed with PFS, wondering if a knee brace would help his symptoms and strengthen his muscles related to his kneecap.
Now, that's patellofemoral pain syndrome. There are braces for this problem, and the most important thing is that there's a hole cut out for the kneecap, because when you have a pull-on sleeve that doesn't have that hole cut out, all it does is put more pressure on your kneecap. The brace will not help to strengthen at all, so the way to strengthen it is to do strengthening exercises, and strengthening exercises for this usually quadriceps and core, glutes, glute medius, glute maximus, a lot of the same things that we use to treat iliotibial band syndrome. So a lot of core strengthening, looking at his biomechanics, would be the key factors.
And here we are.
Time flies, doesn't it?
The time flew by. And I was just looking ahead here, and Judith had reminded me that you usually are here
third.
Mm-hmm. But your next appearance is June 13th, which is actually, it turns out to be the second Monday of the month.
That's what it is. Yep. I knew there was something different about next month. Yep. So the 13th.
The thing to know is that you will be back on June 13th.
Indeed.
Yes, we will.
Perfect.
Right.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
Pleasure as always.
Bill Boisenault, Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. He teaches in the Physical Therapy Program at UW. Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And they will be back June 13th. Just to take a look ahead to tomorrow, Oh, at 11 o'clock, I'll be talking with award-winning author Jeff Shera about the final book in his World War II series. It's called The Final Storm. Covers the war in the Pacific. Great to have him back again. And then at 11:45, we'll learn about hoarseness in children for Better Speech and Hearing Month. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.